Hello and welcome to Politics War Room with James Carville, and I am Al Hunt. This week we have our special holiday episode with our wonderful, accomplished wives, Judy Woodruff and Mary Madeline. So remember, we love taking your questions, so write to politicswarroom@gmail.com or send a tweet to @Politicon for next week's show. We'll get to as many as we can, but don't forget to tell us where you're from. In other exciting news, the documentary Carville, Winning is Everything Stupid, is now streaming on Max. Get updates and some great behind-the-scenes content by following James on Twitter @JamesCarville and on his new TikTok @RealJamesCarville. You can also get text updates about what's next for Politicon and Politics War Room by signing up at Politicon.com. Tell your friends about us and remind them to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast. And please check out the links to our sponsors, Laundry Sauce and Beam. We thank you for supporting our sponsors. It really helps make this podcast happen. All right, James, we have to be on our best behavior because we are outgunned today by Mary Madeline, Judy Woodruff. I'm going to start off, Mary. I want to ask you first, what was your reaction to the James documentary? How'd you feel it portrayed you?
Well, that's not the issue for me because I don't want to talk about it because I didn't really ever want to do it. But my reaction, and on that, I'm so happy to be wrong. I just didn't want to fool with that community, but they turned Matt Turnauer and Susan McHugh. I mean, it was the most engaging, interesting, artful experience of my life. But I will say about James, it rejiggered my, it's like what James used to say when Mike Tyson hits you, it changes the way you taste. I learned things about James that I never knew, and I don't think I ever would have learned had I not seen that. And I also think it did great for New Orleans. It did great for the profession. I can't tell you how many people from both sides of the aisle called to say, yes, it was the golden era. And we did our jobs with integrity. And I know a lot of people are doing it today, would like to still be doing it that way. But this, you know, the system got turned into a racket. So I generally loved it on many, many levels, not least of which my husband is genetically hilarious without even trying to be. What did you think?
I thought it was fabulous. I mean, I thought there were so many high points. One of them, I was so glad they were able to highlight the Carville Hunt technological genius, which a lot of people weren't aware of, Mary.
Well, I was aware of it because I live with you guys, but Al, you are literally like a mad scientist when it comes to just putting on headphones. Man, the two of you are a bad TikTok for anti-tech.
James, do you accept that?
Yeah, totally. I can't argue with that.
Can I just say about the James documentary, but that between the two of you, you were an incredible advertisement for marriage. The realities of a loving marriage with all its ups and downs, but mainly its ups. You guys were amazing. So thank you for that.
All right.
Well, I think all marriages are amazing. Honestly, Judy, I think anybody that can stay married for a long time, because you keep changing, the world keeps changing, your kids keep changing. You know, there's something about marriage that is more magical, and I'm not saying this about in a lovely gooky way. It's a big freaking commitment and it's a lot of work. And I say that with love. You got to have something there that makes you want to do all that work. And I see you see this with your kids' marriages. I mean, it's
I got a call today, this morning, an hour ago, from my daughter that her golden retriever is about to have puppies and she's panicked. And could I please come over right away? It's an hour away. And I you know, what do I know about delivering puppies? So you're right. It's never dull.
Well, Al is just the person you want to have there when puppies are being
born.
Yeah,
exactly. James, take over.
Judy, I want to ask a question to the most unretired, retired person I know, and that's you. Tell us what Judy Woodruff has in stake for 2025. And I think you must have a project or two on the table.
Well, thank you, James, for that shameless plug. America at a Crossroads on the PBS NewsHour, which is now, and we are finishing up our second year of traveling the country, visiting 26 states, filing 48 pieces for the NewsHour over the last 2 years. We are going to continue for one more year, trying to look at, continue to understand our deep divide in America and try to find examples. And they are there of people and communities who are working across the divide. We know they exist. They are largely at the local level, at the community, the neighborhood level, and it's not everywhere. But we're going to be looking not exclusively at that, but we're going to try to make an effort to show the American people that it's possible to work with somebody, even if you have a profound political disagreement with them.
Well, I'll say something. One of the things I disagree with, and I started some when you left PBS, that you're the most influential female journalist of our time. That's an error. You're the most influential journalist of our time. And mean that. I mean, your contributions were... remember, Inside Politics, and then what you've done to NewsHour is just breathtaking and stunning. And I was so happy that your career got somewhat the credit it deserves in your retirement. So good luck on this project, Albert.
Great. Let's turn to Christmas. We're actually going to air the day after Christmas, so we can all talk about the great celebrations we're going to have. And if something bad happened, we don't have to talk about it. But nothing bad ever happens on Christmas Day, Mary. Anything different this year? Will the kids be home?
Well, some big major thing has happened, at least emotionally, if you will. My oldest daughter and I decided that we no longer are going to stress for Christmas, and it's about the kids. And she has taken over the family tradition. She's having Christmas Day brunch, and we're going to open presents at her house. So it's a passing of the baton in our house. I like that a lot. But bad stuff happens on Christmas. I don't think it's going to happen this year. I don't think anything bad's going to happen this year. We're blessed. We got a baby. We got a toddler opening presents. What's better than that?
Nothing.
Well, as good as having a seven-year-old opening presents, which we have, but what's not as good is trying to deal with my daughter's puppy problems. But anyway, go ahead, James.
Get fresh and stay fresh with laundry sauce. It smells good, but I don't understand if people don't have their clothes smell just at best neutral, and they put, $50 cologne on their face. Why not have clothes that more your body is occupied by your clothes than by the cologne on your face? And this stuff makes your clothes really smell good. I think it's a wonderful product.
Yeah, that's why this podcast is sponsored by Laundry Sauce. Laundry Sauce created the world's best-smelling laundry detergent in simple-to-use, high-performance pods. It has transformed doing laundry into a luxurious and exciting experience. It's exciting. So you don't have to dread laundry day anymore. So what's the secret sauce behind Laundry Sauce? They partnered with one of the top fragrance houses in the world, the same team behind many of your favorite designer scents. Now that we can pick from scents like Australian sandalwood, Egyptian rose, and Siberian pine, laundry day will never smell the same again. They've transformed the boring task of doing laundry into a luxurious sensory experience. Now it's no longer a dreaded chore. You can go with Australian sandalwood, and you're going to look fresh and enjoying a distinguished, relaxing scent while you're out getting ready for the holidays. Apparently, our houses now have what the kids call a vibe. To fill you in, Laundry Sauce was started back in 2021 by a team who were bored by the mundane, chemically smelling scents in the detergent aisle. So they brought out the world's number one fragrance house to bring beautiful, complex aromas made from high-quality natural ingredients and put them in a powerful, stain-fighting laundry pod. They've earned some of the funniest, most authentic reviews you'll ever read. After using it, Kristen said, I actually like doing laundry now. Kristen is at first, but others are going to agree. Laundry Sauce even makes scent boosters, dryer sheets, dryer balls, fabric softeners, and candles too. Plus, if you aren't happy, send back Laundry Sauce for a full refund. No questions asked. Now is the time to elevate your laundry ritual with Laundry Sauce. Head to laundrysauce.com/war room and use the promo code War Room at checkout for 15% off. That's the best offer you'll find, but you've got to use our code War Room for 15% off. One last time, that's laundrysauce.com/war room, promo code War Room for 15% off. The link is also in our show notes.
So I asked Mary, because I'm kind of, why don't you tell us about the gift, because she won't hear it, that you're making for our oldest daughter and why this is special for her, in addition to being a mother, of course.
Oh, I'm not. That's not for Christmas. I am Japanese stab binding our daughter's MFA dissertation, which is ready to be published. I don't think she can publish it. It's a little... She embargoed it for 30 years. So I'm just telling you, the content needs to be embargoed for 30 years, but the writing is beautiful. And I'm Japanese stab binding. And for Christmas, everybody's getting their preferred gift, cash. But James, I got you the best present ever. You're never easy to get for. And I rocked my own world with your presence this year.
You're a great gift giver. I can't wait. We're going to have so much fun, and everybody's going to be home, and looks like we have good weather. Albert?
Albert, can I tell you something about puppy delivery? I used to do that. That's how I got through school. All you have to do is just be there, and if a sack doesn't break, you got to break it yourself, and you got to bring the little puppy to the mother's mouth. And my African cats had kittens literally on his pillow next to his head. So if he can do that, you can deliver puppies.
Well, yeah, we went when our first retriever had puppies. I thought there was a problem, and I called the vet and I said, "You got to get over here. This is really, really bad." And by the time he arrived, about 40 pounds overweight, bag in hand, he walked in. She had already delivered three puppies. It looked like a Saturday Evening Post cover, because she did all the work and she did it beautifully. And I think that's going to happen this time, too. Yeah. Judy, talk about our Christmas.
Well, we are hosting again, Mary. We haven't graduated to turning it over to the next generation yet. We are hosting Jeff and Ben, Hemi, and our grandson Kai, and we'll see how many dogs we have show up. Our tradition is we open stockings, and we still have, quote, Santa for even our kids who are in their 30s and 40s. So it's very much the old-fashioned Woodruff Hunt or Hunt Woodruff Christmas. And then the next day, we're taking off for Colorado to ski for a week. So we'll see if Al and I go in one piece or not.
Well, we also have, as always, Andrea Mitchell and 98-year-old Alan Greenspan spend Christmas with us, and it really is a treat. He's been a wonderful addition. He's different at Christmas morning than he is as the Fed chairman in those days of yesteryear. And the other thing is that this is a big deal. James, you know, mentored Benjamin, and he's got a big role. The Shields have a Christmas Eve party, and Benjamin dresses as Santa Claus.
Benjamin's a perfect Santa. He has the whole Santa vibe, although he's a little skinny, but he's got that ho-ho-ho joy in his heart. He really is the man to be Santa. That's great.
Well, they
I love him, that boy.
Yeah, you know, they asked him to do it last year, and I think he thought that he couldn't pull it off, but he was perfect. You know, having those little kids sit in his lap and tell him what they wanted for Christmas, and he ended up loving it.
Well, he just finished his fourth campaign, all due to Mr. Carville.
So, Albert, let me ask while I got you. Mark's granddaughter, the basketball player, she made a college choice yet?
She's going to Middlebury, James.
Okay.
She decided that she wanted to play college basketball, but not big time, where it just dominates your life. So she has some interest from schools that were big time, but she fell in love with Middlebury and she'll play up there.
Well, what a great school. I'm great. Because I tell you, I know Coach Mulkey. I know it's these D1 college women basketball. It's no different than men's basketball. Right. It's basketball all the time, every day, every week, every year.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I think she's glad to see that.
She's a wonderful kid. I've been to two of her games this year. They won. They're undefeated. They're ranked 12th in the city. So, no.
This is the Bethesda Chevy Chase. What's the name of the team?
Barons.
The Barons. And Francie, Mark Shields' granddaughter, Mark and Ann Shields' granddaughter, is a real star. She's great.
Oh, you know, a great kid.
Us parents of like non-athletic daughters, is women's basketball the new girls soccer/lacrosse? Like our girls, Emma used to go, whatever, she joined any sport just to wear the uniform and then would stand in the back and file her nails. So we don't have any athletes in our female family, but this seems like it's been the year for women's basketball, no?
Oh, James can pick up on that. It really is. And they are good. They are,
explosion.
Obviously Caitlin Clark and company, but just going to that high school basketball game, they have a couple. They have players on that team that I swear could play with boys. I mean, they wouldn't be quite as good, but they are amazing. So I think you're right, Mary. It is. James, pick up on that.
Well, it's just an explosion, and it's been really good. Interest in women's sports. I know I watch games myself. And the other sport that's growing hugely is gymnastics, particularly women's gymnastics. We sell out. In a lot of other people, like Utah, I mean, you'd be surprised at how competitive and how big a sport that women's college gymnastics has become.
Wow.
It's not a niche sport, an Olympic sport anymore. It's we get 15,000 or 14,000 a meet.
That grew out of the Olympics, James?
I think it did, yes. I think it was an Olympic sport. I mean, we grew up with Mary Lou Retton and, gymnasts, but it's become, in an increasingly number of places, a really, really popular sport, and is probably at 4 or 5 schools going to end up here in the next 5 years being a revenue generator, which is almost impossible to believe.
Mary, I want to burnish my Republican credentials by claiming that the president that pushed and signed into law Title IX, which enabled this to happen, was Richard Nixon. And boy, Title IX has made a big, big difference in all these areas.
You ought to see at the high school level, like where Mary and I in the Shenandoah Valley at Central High, they have 7 different women's sports. Yeah. When I went to high school, all I had was basketball and had 3 on one side of the court and 3 on the other side.
Yeah.
Volleyball is big, too, for women. And what is it? Tennis has been around for a long time.
Title IX made such a difference.
Yeah. Well, what a great show, guys.
Merry Christmas to you, Mary Madeline and James Carville. And I hope we can someday reach the point where one of our kids hosts us for Christmas. We're very envious.
Mary, happy. You guys, every year we say this, and every year it's more true. You're dear, dear, in our heart, friends. Thank you. Another great year.
Love you both. Have a great Christmas.
All right. Love everybody. Thank you.
Take care. Bye.
Get the sleep you need with a delicious cup of Beam.
It feels good, and I'll tell you what else feels good, is the Beam Dream. The taste of it is really good. When you can take something that, A, tastes really good at night, and B, help you go to sleep, man, you've hit the daily double there.
You know, after the election, getting to sleep has been a challenge. But it's more important than ever to get the rest we need, because there's a lot of work to do. We all know good sleep is the foundation of our mental and physical health. When you sleep well, you can perform your best, mentally and physically. Proper sleep can also increase focus, boost energy, and improve your mood. That's why we're so excited to talk about Beam Dreams Powder, a science-backed, healthy hot cocoa for sleep that has single-handedly changed sleep for the better. This bedtime essential is delicious, decadent, and guilt-free, thanks to only 15 calories and 0 grams of sugar per serving. You'll love flavors like sea salt caramel, brownie batter, vanilla chai, and the Beam Dream Powder original flavor cinnamon cocoa. That's a favorite. It's the perfect complement to the holidays, but for a limited time, they have white chocolate peppermint and gingerbread also. You can say with confidence, better sleep will never taste better. Dream is tested for high quality efficacy and formulated to ease your body into rest, supporting all four stages of the sleep cycle. To help you fall asleep faster and stay asleep longer, other sleep aids can cause next day grogginess, but Dream contains a powerful all-natural blend of magnesium, L-theanine, apigenin, and melatonin to help you fall asleep, stay asleep, and wake up refreshed. Beam Dream is easy to add to your nighttime routine. Just mix Dream in the hot water or milk, froth, and enjoy before bed. And now for the best part. If you want to try Beam's best-selling Dream Powder, get up to 40% off for a limited time when you go to shopbeam.com/warroom and use the code warroom at checkout. That's shop BEAM.com/warroom and use the code warroom for up to 40% off. You also can find the link in our show notes. All right, now for our listener questions. James Jameson in Chicago wants to know, does it make sense to pick our battles with Trump? Maybe wait for him to make a mistake before we erupt, drive a wedge among his voters and the contractions, et cetera, what?
What? First of all, what a smart freaking question.
Sure is.
And what a question that no one is sure what the exact answer is. I think temporarily we should say they have all the power. They won the election. They control the House. I mean, and we go into this battle on our hind foot, but not without some opportunities. His nominees are not popular. His House majority is onion paper thin, I guess you'd call it. My own sense is we should let them take the initiative for now. And at that point, we can fall back and strengthen our position on any number of things. But it's a good question. I don't know if there's a definitive answer to it. And we're going to have to depend a lot on some of the congressional leaderships. And we're going to also have to figure a rallying point for the resistance to this, which we do not have right now. And maybe it's better that we don't rush into it. I don't know, but that's a brilliant question. And neither I nor anybody else have a really satisfactory answer.
No, I agree. Jameson's a great question. My own sense is that the politicians, the House and Senate Democrats, have to do exactly that. Wait, give him, say, it's all yours, baby. Let's see what you can do with it.
And when there's a hole in their lines, right, then we pounce, and they're going to be holes in their lines, I promise you, and we just got to spot them early.
And I do wish some outside groups would start revving up, though, because that's, you know, they need accountability. They need someone to check them. And
I talked to one of the senators, and they can just start putting amendments and make them vote on unpopular things, like let's raise the minimum wage to $14.50 an hour. They're never going to vote for it. Right. All right. Let's suspend the tax cuts. Let's have a motion to not renew the tax cuts over $400,000 a year, put that money somewhere. Make them make bad votes. And I think the way you know this better than I do, it's hard to do the way the House is organized. It's much easier in the Senate.
It is. And James, you know, some of these confirmation hearings could be important.
Yes.
I mean, heck, this guy Hegseth has to go before the Armed Services Committee. Two of the members on that committee are Tammy Duckworth, who lost a leg in military service, and Elizabeth Warren. That is not going to be a day in the park for Mr. Hegseth. Those two
I may have had a policy disagreement with Senator Warren. I would not want her to question me.
I would not either.
I am no way near as smart as that person is, okay? That would be my worst nightmare. Yeah, I hope she just drives it home. I really do.
Yeah.
And I hope she focuses more. I mean, certainly she should, but just more on women's issues.
Right. And Senator Duckworth can say, you really think that I didn't belong in the military in combat, right. Mr. Secretary Designate? He's going to have a tough time.
He's going to try to back out of it and say, you knew all of that at the time. Let me show you some other pictures of women. Yes, you can have a field day with that guy.
Yeah, you sure can. Bill in Cleveland, Ohio says, Daily News Gems has a great list of the biggest stories of 24. What do you think they were? James, truth requires me to acknowledge Trump winning the election was far and away the biggest story of 2024. I think it's the saddest, but I think it's the biggest. It's going to have long-range implications. If I were to pick a second, it would probably be Syria and the unrest that they may cause, or rest it may cause in the Middle East.
Well, I agree. To be notes are the two headlines. The thing that should be the biggest story every year is not, and that's climate. In November, New Orleans was three degrees hotter than the average. When you tell somebody November's 3 degrees hotter than the average, it's hard to digest how profound that is.
Right.
And it's really hard to digest what's happening in the Arctic right now. It's almost impossible. And I just name drop, we had him on the show. I met 25 minutes with former Vice President Al Gore while I was in London. And that guy has done heroic work on this issue. He might be a little bit more optimistic than I am, but that's not very hard. I think this thing just keeps eroding and eroding.
You know, we talk about good ex-presidents and everything there. Al Gore is one of the great former public servants that ever lived in this country. Yeah. What he has done is just remarkable in both the private and the public sector. And he's just, if anything, I think the Democrats should pay a little bit more attention to Al Gore and highlight him a little bit more.
I would.
I think he's extraordinary.
Sure.
And
would.
He has, yeah. James, he has been right about virtually everything.
Every fucking thing. Been right about more burnt than anybody in my life.
Right, right.
I mean, it's right from airport security. It's not just climate. It's a bucket load of other things.
Sure is. James, Matthew in Trenton, New Jersey wants to know, I'm going to give this to you because I can't answer it. What's your take on the drone sightings on the East Coast? Is it something nefarious?
You know what? You know what I worry about, Albert? There's so many of this crazy conspiracy shit that we just dismiss it as out of hand. And one day, one of these conspiracies is going to be right.
And then we're going to be,
okay? And we're going to go, oh, this is just typical bullshit. I from everything I know, I mean, I know for Governor Phil Murphy, I can't imagine, you know, it's I can keep a secret, it's the people that I tell that can't. And so how, if there is something to this, it would be hard for me to believe that some of it not would have leaked out at some point. But, you know, Harry Reid, actually Bill Clinton to some extent, you know, thought this whole UFO phenomena is something that should be looked into. And one of the things I think mistakes we've made in the past is just dismissing this stuff as some kind of conspiracy crap. And okay, 98% is right, but maybe 2%, I mean, 98% is wrong. Maybe 2% is right. But why don't they give the Air Force general who does this, why don't they do a briefing?
Yeah.
And explain what it is that they think people were seeing. Now, they act like they did. That's the problem. Sometimes the government reflexively acts like there's something to hide.
And every time you're not transparent, you just feed into that that concern, that paranoia, if you will. It's
right. And the other thing I tell, and people now, I mean, we've been very successful, you know, in undermining, and I think to a large extent, you know, some of the institutions have been complicit in this. But just remember, a broken clock is right twice a day. A conspiracy theorist is right, you know, twice out of every 1,000 times.
That's what Novak used to always tell me. I was the broken clock who was right twice a day.
Right.
Terrible confession. I miss him terribly. Anyway, Richard in Roseville, Minnesota says, not prosecuting a sitting president is a DOG, Department of Justice, DOJ, policy guideline, not a law. Is it time to change that? No, it's not. I mean, look, Trump got away with it. Trump gamed and beat the system. I think he clearly committed, you know, multiple crimes. The Justice Department was too slow. He got a judge who was in the tank to him. The prosecutor in Atlanta was inept, and he got away with it. I hate to admit that, but he did. But I don't think you can prosecute a sitting president. You can prosecute him the minute he's out of office or she's out of office, but it would cause too many problems.
You know, I kind of agree with you, but only kind of.
Yeah,
I think of course, we've gotten totally away from Supreme Court. You know, the reason, one of the main reasons this country was founded is nobody could be above the law.
No man.
That's clear in any founding document and anything. I can't tell you I'm an expert on the Federalist Papers, but I suspect that's in there. And even if you say you can't indict a sitting president, I see why that makes some sense, but it violates the very core. Now, and that is not a law. That's a Justice Department regulation, which has zero force anywhere outside of the Justice Department. So I don't know. I'm not absolutely certain. I can see the rationale for the policy, but it supersedes a very fundamental idea of what the United States is.
Well, the fact that Trump got away with lawless behavior certainly does make you think twice. I'm not sure that's the answer, but when you tell your kids if you don't obey the law, you get caught. I'm sorry, all they have to answer is Donald Trump. But that's where we are. James, I got one more that I think is from Shreveport, Louisiana. Angie says, how can Democrats best publicize the ways in which Trump is breaking his campaign promises and helping the rich at the expense of the poor? We need to get that message out. That I would just quickly add, that's a really good question, because some of those cuts they're talking about are going to hit his people, James.
It's not only a good question, but I want to go back to question number one about how the Democrats should react. And there's so many different things that Trump presents you with: his criminality, his crudeness, his appointments, his quote fundraising unquote, the people that he hangs out with. And one of the challenges that question number one and question number five ask is key in a democracy to find. What opening are you looking for? In any time that you can say, and which you're going to have, trust me, you're going to have ample times, that he's favoring the billionaire class over the working class, and you don't tell people they were stupid. You said the problem is, you know, you should have never believed them in the first place. But question number one and question number five, those questions should be asked before the House Democratic Caucus, the Senate Caucus, the new DNC chair, anybody else, because that's the fundamental question.
Yeah, it sure is. This is the last show that will air before the new year. So I just want to wish everybody, and I know James joins me, a very happy new year. I hope you had a wonderful holiday. And I promise we may have been a little bit sour and dour the last 2 months. We're going to have a interesting and at times uplifting and show in 2025. So stick with us, please. James, you want to add anything?
No, I mean, it's been it was first 10 months of the year were interesting. you know, sometimes you're on a show and you make mistakes, and you should always acknowledge mistakes when you make them. But sometimes you don't make mistakes. And sometimes, you know, when both of us are above 80, so it's very crass for somebody to say, but I told you so. But this show consistently, since the first of the year, actually before that, but we're just talking about 2024, has maintained that Biden should have dropped out, should not have offered himself for re-election. And that if he did, we thought that the party would be immeasurably stronger by having an open and contested process. And neither one of these things happened. And, you know, everybody hates to be, I told you so, but in this instance, it doesn't make you popular. It makes you feel like you're, make other people think you're a jerk, but we told you so. That's all I can tell you. We told you so.
James, you're so right. And it's so sad. Obviously, the greatest impact of that was Trump getting elected, which I think I don't think would have happened if Biden had dropped out. But it certainly the odds would have been.
They would not have happened.
But it also
it had been an open process.
Joe Biden has had a good public career, had a
stunning.
And he is leaving a defeated man. And I hate to say it, but it was of his own doing.
Joe Biden has had a stunning public career, and it breaks my heart to see that it's not going to get near the recognition and appreciation it deserves.
Right. You remember when we were with Doris Goodwin up in Boston a month or so ago, she noted that Lyndon Johnson was finally starting to get the recognition that he deserved for his great domestic achievements. James, that was 50 years after his death. So we're talking about Joe Biden, we're talking 2004.
Biden had such a distinguished career. And, much of the damage that he's suffering is just self-inflicted.
Oh, so much. Okay, Happy New Year to everybody. We'll start with James and Mary, but all of you out there, we really love our audience. And please stick with us and keep those questions coming in. We'll see you in 2025.
Absolutely. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year.
Hey, thanks for listening to Politics War Room with James Carville, and I'm Al Hunt. As always, send your questions for us by email to politicswarroom@gmail.com or tweet them for next week's show at Politicon. Following this episode, we'd appreciate it if you check out the links to our sponsors, Laundry Sauce and Beam, and our episode show notes. We thank you for supporting them because when you do, it helps make this podcast happen. To keep up with us, subscribe to Politics War Room on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen, and check out our Substack at politicswarroom.com. James and I are constantly adding new content, so go take a look. You also can find other shows you might enjoy in the Politicon YouTube channel or when you search Politicon on your favorite podcast sites. Remember, please rate the show with a 5-star review. We'll be back next week with another show as we continue our War Room planning.